So never match their anger. The next thing is to be specific. Specifically, you don't tear things off your wall. Specifically, you don't throw your toys around the room. Specifically, you do your homework. Specifically, you do come in at time. Be specific. The next thing is stay focused. And what does stay focused? Stay focused on the problem. This is the issue that we're dealing with. The issue we're dealing with is homework. This is the only issue I'm going to speak to you about. Homework. And the next thing is don't take their anger personally. I did too. I mean, I had just cleaned his entire room with him all day long, and then he goes up there and he trashes it. It was definitely a personal affront.
I hate you, Mother. I'm like, ooh, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I have this big kid who all of a sudden I now have in a detention home when he's 17 years old. Military school. I better start saving for military school. And the kid's 4 years old. You know, when you have those kind of thoughts about your kid over one incident, you're in trouble. You better take a time out. So if you can think of them as temper tantrums, the older they get, though, the more serious the temper tantrums seem to be to us, don't they? I mean, when a six-year-old is yelling, I hate you, they, like, know what I hate you means. A four-year-old, you're just not quite sure. And when a 17-year-old is yelling it at you, you know that you're in trouble, right? It's nothing more than a temper tantrum. And if you'll do these things and you'll keep deflecting the argument, regardless of whether you hate me or not, you still need any questions.
No. They hear things. We're going to talk in number six session. We're going to talk about what difference other people and peer pressure and that kind of thing has on children. It only takes 4 days for a child to completely change their personality depending on their peer group. 4 days. 4 days. And they will completely change their dress, their attitude, the way that they speak to you, and their level of responsibility. It only takes 4 days. That also means it only takes 4 days to change that, however. So it's not hopeless. But it plays a big part. It plays a big part. But if you're interacting with them as young adults, you can interact with them. If you're interacting with them as my kids, they're being warped by these jerks that they go into school with. There's nothing you can do about that. See? So you're going to keep them home and homeschool them. And, I've thought about that. I'll just homeschool them and won't be around anybody for the rest of his life and he'll turn out one.
A wonderful hermit who can't interact with people socially.
The thing to continue asking yourself with teenagers is who's in control? Who's in control? Are you in control? Are they? And they will continue spewing out all of these terrible things that you did to them, and you have to keep deflecting the argument. You have to keep deflecting. If you will do this, you will never match their anger. Because in order to say, nevertheless, regardless of that, you have to not take it personally. Now, why are teenagers like this? Do any of you remember what it's like to be a teenager? I promised myself I would never forget. It was the most horrendous experience of my life thus far. You wake up in the morning. You have to get up. You have to get dressed. You have to go to school. You have to look right. You have to dress right. You have to act right. You have to be with the right crowd. You have to be attractive. You have to fit in. You have to not fit in over here, and you have to fit in over here. And you have to decide which one you want to fit in with. You have to do the right thing, you have to say the right thing, you have to be the right thing. All day long, you've got teachers telling you what to do. All day long, you've got your peers telling you what to do. All day long, you've got everybody in the world telling you what to do. And then you come home, and you walk in the door. What did your mother say?
How was school?
And what are you going to say to that? You're in total overload. You've either made it good today in school or not made it. You have to be good academically. You have to be good in gym. You have to look good in your gym shorts. You have to have the right clothes. You have to have the right books. You have to have the right pencil. You have to have the right purse. You have to have the right hair. How can you have any peace of mind with all of that going on? Yeah, your boobs are growing and your abs and your legs and they've got prettier and you've got. And you can't believe that children do not think about things like that. They're at a sexual point in their life. They're at a social point in their life. They're determining who they're going to be, what they're going to be, and what they want to be. And they don't even have enough information to make all those decisions. And then we say, well, you have college. You have to go to school in 10th grade because you have to go to college. And what do you want to be? You need to think about what you want to be. Who knows at 15, 16 years old what they want to be for the rest of their life? I don't even know. 37 years old, I don't even know. Why do you have to pick one thing? So then you come home and your mother wants to know about your day. What can you tell her, your mother, about your day? Who even wants to tell their mother? But you want to come in and what do you want to do? Go to sleep. You want to zone out for 30 minutes. You want to have no questions for 30 minutes. You don't want anybody even looking at you for 30 minutes. If you remember what it's like to be a teenager, you'll remember that feeling of just being told, you know, even maintaining yourself on the school bus coming home was just too much sometimes. If you look at how many fights happen going to school as opposed to how many fights coming home from school, which one do you think you can find the most fights on the school bus coming home from school? It is stressed out. Stressed out. And then we come home and our parents want all of this information. We can't give it to them. So number one, don't say anything but, hi honey, I love you, I'll see you later when your kids come home. They have to have 30 minutes. That's all it takes. This is why lock themselves turn on. This is why you have teenagers who come home and pull up down in front of the sofa. What are you doing when you're watching a soap opera? Nothing. Nothing. What are you doing when you're watching MTV? Nothing. Your mind is totally occupied and you are resting. You are someplace else and your body is sitting in front of the TV. Nintendo. It takes a little concentration, Nintendo, though. Kids have to have 30 minutes to an hour when they're out of school to do nothing. They don't want to come home and do their homework. They don't want to come home and cook dinner. They don't want to come home and do chores. If you try to make them do that, you're not going to win. They're not going to do it. They don't have it left in them. They don't have it to give. Force them to do it, they'll do it, but it will be an upset. So your kids need a half hour or 45 minutes just to get home. When you come home from work, what do you want to do? Eat nothing for half hour, an hour. You want to do nothing, right? I mean, you don't want to answer questions. You don't want to answer 100 questions. You don't want to fix dinner. You don't want to talk. You don't want to think. You don't want to do any of that. Children are no different, particularly young adults. They are no different. They don't want to, and they can't. And if you demand it of them, you're going to have a problem because they can't. School lasts from the time they leave school to the time they get home. It's 8 hours. You work 8 hours. They work 8 hours. Questions about that? So you have to have compassion for that. You have to have compassion that they just put in 8 very difficult hours. Now, it may have been an absolutely glorious day and everything went wonderful and their hair turned out right. Or it could be a really, really bad hair day. Children are cruel to each other, particularly teenagers who are in competition. You're not going to hear about that. They're not going to come home and say, "Mom, you know what she's doing? They're not going to do that. They're going to walk in sulky and pouty, and they're going to try to figure it out themselves because they think they're supposed to. They tell each other, get on the phone for hours. I wouldn't even say, hi, honey. I would do this. See you in a half hour, bub. Love you. Yeah, because the pressure has built. There are pressure cookers. These people are little pressure cookers. You go to a high school, sit around and watch what happens. It's not fun. It's supposed to be the most exciting time of our lives. And that's where we define ourselves. And you have to have compassion for anybody who's going through that. They do. They are in crisis 24 hours a day. Young adults are in crisis 24 hours a day. Every little teeny tiny thing takes them over the edge. Now, as a parent, does that mean we have to go over the edge with them? No, what's our job? Hey, girl. What job as a parent? To guide them? Listen. All you can do with teenagers is listen. When you've had it, listen. That's all you can do for teenagers. When your son comes in, all you can say is, ooh, boy. You cannot do a thing. Nothing. No, they don't. You cannot solve teenagers' problems. You cannot do it. I mean, you can do it. You can sit down and you can figure out what the problem is. Figure out what the solution is, but it's not going to help them. And that's the hardest part of having a teenager, is that most parents feel totally out of control, and that's why they feel totally out of control. If I tell my 4-year-old this is the problem and this is the solution, he'll go do the solution. If I tell my 17-year-old this is the problem, this is the solution, what you're going to do to me? Shoot me a bird. Stay out of my business. What do you know? You don't understand. You're an old fart. I never thought I'd ever be an old fart. But yet I remember calling my mother an old fart because she tried to solve my problems. You cannot solve their problems. All you can do is listen and not match their anger. Try to solve their problems. That's right. Another problem for you. Yeah. Not your mouth for it. The other thing that we expect as adults is that when teenagers or young adults ask us why, they really do want to know why. It's not like a 4-year-old asking why and you can say, well, because I said so. Just because I said so at some point is not going to work. You're going to have to explain why. Now, are they challenging your authority when they ask that? No, they're not. They're not challenging your authority when they ask why. They want to know why. Why, Mom? Why do we do this way? They are totally examining their entire life, and they really want to know why. How do you make that rational decision? How do you start at A and come out with C, Mom? They're not challenging your authority.
Well, I was ready to go out.
But why? Because they have the daddy. Why? Why not put someone out and just put the people out? All he had to say was what? Regardless of whether I said so last week. Because that works. And you have spent your entire life asking why. If you get your answers, if you get your questions answered as to why, you can start making logical choices and logical decisions. Now remember, this happens at 10. Some children 9. So you have to discern first what? Who am I speaking to? Am I speaking to a 4-year-old who just wants the wrong way and is going to go on and on like Rose McNeil does? Why? Or am I speaking to a young adult who's trying to figure out how this decision-making process works? They don't know how the decision-making process works. They're at a point between, Mommy's going to tell me what to do, and, well, I'm at school and I have all these decisions to make, and I'm not quite sure how to make these decisions. How does one come to making a decision and know that that decision is accurate? Some of us still struggle with that. How do we know our decisions are right? Because as teenagers, we were very used to being told what to do. Now, there are ground rules in a house, and the ground rules have to be followed. Why? Why? Why do ground rules have to be followed in a home? Right. So there's a point where I told you so is not going to work. It's going to produce anger, it's going to produce frustration, and it's going to produce acceptance. Most people don't. Most people don't when they move away from home. Because you have no certainty that your decisions are right or that you even have the capacity. Starts early. Starts between 6 and 10. By 10, the decisions that they're making, you want them to know that their decisions are sound. So that when they enter this crisis, this 24-hour-a-day crisis for 3 or 4 years, they are of sound mind to make sound decisions. That's why I say you can't wait to wake up and find a teenager in your household. Because you'll be out of control and they'll be out of control and nobody will know what to do.
Which has
you lose your trust in her. Right, but then any time that you're in a situation where you don't know which decision to make, you wind up not making a decision. You'll have somebody else overshadow and they make a decision. It doesn't turn out. And that's a hard habit to break. 10-year-olds know how to make decisions. Their decisions are very limited, but they know how to make decisions. Do they know how to plan the rest of their life? No. Do they know how to guide themselves? No. But if you start with little teeny tiny decisions, do you want to do your homework now or do you want to do your homework before bed? Start with these little decisions. They'll start encouraging themselves to make the right decisions. And they'll know how to put in correction when they've made the wrong decision. Correct. That didn't work. I fell asleep doing my homework. So that doesn't work. Okay, so now we know. And that's a natural part of the decision-making process. Everybody makes bad decisions. You make a lot of bad decisions in your lifetime. Let's hope this is your biggest one. And trust themselves to make the right decision. So when they're out driving around and somebody's drunk and they're 15 years old, they know, get out of the car. Get out of the car. Call Mom. They'll only be mad for 5 minutes. They won't say, oh God, don't call Mom. She's very upset for 5 minutes. And then she'll be off it. So come get me anyway and I'll be safe. That's a good decision. You had a question? You have to decide for yourself if they're asking really why or if they're asking for an argument. You know your child enough to know when they just want to start an argument or if they're really asking why. And you'll know by whether they listen to you or not. When you start explaining why, you'll know. Usually around six, you start explaining little things. And then as it goes along, you start explaining more things. You just want to make sure you don't become a preacher. Well, honey, this is why we put the stove up to medium. Because it boils the pot. And do you know that when the pot boils, the molecules all bounce together? And that's what heats it up? I've heard people who do this with their children. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. You think that kid's listening to you? You're out of your mind. So you start by explaining a few things a day. When they ask why can't I go outside? You can't go outside because it's cold. And I don't want to go with you because I don't want to get cold. Well, why? You know, that's like the end of the conversation. I've already explained to you why.
Oh.
All right? So you start with little explanations so that by the time they're teenagers, they feel safe to ask you why. What happens when you don't answer your kids' why questions is what?
They stop asking questions.
Do not want this. You want your child to come to you and say, Mommy, what is AIDS? They were talking at school today about AIDS. What is AIDS?
As you blush and say, well, it has to do with sex. And we don't talk about that. Right?
No answer. Everybody goes pink on me here.
That's not really awesome. Did you hear the friend talking to you about AIDS?
Mm-hmm.
You got AIDS.
Yeah.
And we're talking to you 6 years old. What
AIDS? But would you have the same reaction if you said, Mommy, what's cancer?
No.
No. That's the point. That's the point. You need to start practicing now talking about sex. Thinking about how you're encourage yourself to be a sexual being without asking it out. And where you stand with all that, with your spouse. Because you're 8, 9, 10 years old, you're going to be having a conversation. And you have to be age appropriate. As their bodies start changing, you have to give them the information that they need. The thing to do with your teenagers or with your young adults is to share your life, not with. The last thing that children want to hear is your wisdom. Another piece of your recall. When we get together with my mother, she has these little things that she always says. I don't remember what we call them. One of mother's little sayings, something like that. Another one of mother's cute little sayings. And it's stuck with my older sister. So every time that my older sister is around, she'll find herself saying one of these cute little sayings. And then she'll say, and that's one of mother's cute little sayings. And my mother will blush, you know, because she didn't realize that she had all these cute little sayings. It's like 6 or 7 of them. And Michelle can recite every single one of them. You want to share with them your life, not your wisdom. So when a teenager, you have to be a place, if you're listening to your teenager, they're going to come to you with more and more and more problems, bigger and bigger problems, problems that you don't want to hear about. Problems about, I'm in love with my boyfriend, and I want to have sex at 12 years old, and I know that I really love him, and, you know, this is everybody's nightmare, right? It's every parent's nightmare. You have to be an open door where they can come do that, because if they don't have that conversation with you, who are they going to have it with? Their girlfriend. And what's their girlfriend going to say? I understand. I'm in love, too. Let's do it. 12 years old is just too old to be a virgin. Just too old. Let's just do it. Well, I heard on television that you have to use condoms, but I don't know how to do that. So what do you think? Should we? Shouldn't we? This is not a conversation you want your 12-year-old to go to their girlfriend with. You understand? You have to be an open door where they can come and talk to you. And the only way to do that is to listen, and never match their anger, and don't take their anger personally. Anything about it. So the thing you have to do when she throws those out, they will get more and more vicious as she goes through this process. You have to use nevertheless or regardless. Regardless of whether you think I'm listening to you or not, I'm still here.
What the hell, what do you know about love?
Nevertheless, this is the issue. This is the decision you have to make. Sorry, I can't make it for you. Sorry you find yourself in this situation. Regardless of that, what's the decision you have to make? What are your choices? And then go through the whole problem solving. But you have to stay detached by using these two words, because it's going to get pretty hairy. Situation.